This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Here are the stories I'm hearing as we bring Tom Hauser in the conversation on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline, that there were at least 20 speakers set up along the Twin Cities Marathon, Dave Harrigan, playing one song. The Hauser Man song.
I heard Alan Page was actually playing that on the tuba, too.
On the tuba, Alan Page was playing the Hauser Man. So, you know, we had the debate the other day. Should people go and cheer? I mean, do you really enjoy it? But then I heard there was a rider in the agreement that Tom had put in there, and he said, I'm a big deal. That's what he said. He wrote to the Marathon Committee, first of all, I'm a big deal. He said, if you don't have 20 speakers set up playing the Hauser Man song, I'm done. I'm out of here. So, I mean, did they have as many speakers as you needed yesterday, Tom?
I'm not going to deny anything that you just said. Those were all true. Clearly, they didn't accede to any of my unreasonable demands.
Yeah, so all seemed fair.
I just had to run it with the music that was provided and not one Hauser Man rendition for 26.2 miles. Although, in my head, I could hear it.
Was this 36? Is that what I saw you either on Insta or tweeting yesterday?
Number 36 overall.
Wow.
And I think it was my 18th or 19th Twin Cities. I've kind of lost track of that. I've been running it so long, it was before they had all of the records digitized. So, but my first one was in 1988.
Okay. Did they have vehicles back then? Electricity? I'm just trying to.
Yeah, well, it was hard, you know, because sometimes they would make a stop when the horse and buggies would go through an intersection, so that would slow you down a little bit.
Yes, sure.
And Summit was a dirt road.
Yes.
So it would get, if it was as windy as it was yesterday, back then you'd have to deal with the dust. So yeah, it's been a while.
Okay, how did this one feel compared to others?
Well, this was my slowest one ever, and I knew it would be because I've been battling a calf injury since, I think, August. I've been doing physical therapy, anything I can to get it back. My longest training run was I did 2 14-milers and 2 10-milers. Other than that, no other double-digit runs, so I knew it was going to be a struggle. But as you know, I was doing this. I was supposed to do it last year to honor my sister who passed away last year. And then they canceled, so I pulled that shirt out that we had special Mile for Maggie shirt. And I wore that yesterday, and I was determined to do it whether I was ready or not. So I set a modest goal, just do it under 5 hours, and I finished in 4 hours and 56 minutes. So my slowest one ever, but I was just as proud of this one as any of the others.
And somewhere Maggie is every bit as proud, right?
So that she helped me. She helped push me through to the finish, because when your longest training run is 14 miles, when you hit the 20-mile mark, you're in no man's land.
Yeah.
You don't. It's been a while since you've run that distance, and it catches up to you.
Let's go to Governor Tim Walz. I didn't see it live, but I did see Tim Walz's interview on Fox News with Shannon Bream, and I thought let me just start with her. I thought she was excellent. I thought she was on point. I thought she followed up. I thought she was very specific on abortion. I thought she was very specific on mistakes. I give the governor credit for finally sitting down for an interview or two. And unlike Kamala Harris, is going to very friendly sites today, this week, outside of 60 Minutes, which we'll get to. He's going to Fox News. So how do you think Governor Walz held up to the questioning from Fox News yesterday?
You know, I thought he did pretty well. But again, like many politicians, there were a lot of non-answers. She pressed him repeatedly on, can Israel do a preemptive or do a strike against Iran, including their nuclear facilities? And he wouldn't answer the question other than saying we stand with our allies. And she asked him repeatedly about that. She pressed him on the abortion issue. I don't think he ever came around to acknowledging that our law that he signed into law has no restrictions on abortion through the ninth month of pregnancy.
The wording has been changed.
Yes, and he would deflect and he wouldn't answer it because he says we want to go back to Roe versus Wade, and she pointed out, well, the Minnesota law goes way beyond Roe versus Wade.
Which it does, right? I mean, yeah, there's no denying that.
Yeah, is that what you want for the nation? And then the other interesting thing is how he's very quick to criticize, like, say, Donald Trump and J.D. Vance on whether or not they want a national ban on abortion. Mm-hmm. There was a point in time, when Vance did say that is something he could support. He no longer says that, and neither does Donald Trump. And so Governor Walz doesn't allow them to change their positions while ignoring the fact that Kamala Harris has changed her stance on positions on a multitude of things.
Yes.
Including fracking, which is a huge industry in Pennsylvania, which is a state both sides are desperate to win. And so she gets a pass for changing her positions. He's not willing to give a pass to Donald Trump or J.D. Vance for their position on abortion.
Yeah, I mean, the wording on the abortion law was changed, okay? And that was led by the trifecta. I will also say this. I don't think there's a single example in the state, and I know we've had some reporting that maybe it's up to 8 children, because at that point, they are children to me. I mean, at that point in the ninth trimester, they are where the abortion...
For the ninth month, you mean, third trimester.
When you're at that point, you certainly are showing all sorts of cognitive ability in other areas, where I think some people have tossed out the idea, Tom, that 8 babies initially may have survived the abortion. The question I have is, what else was going on? What kind of shape was the mother in? What kind of shape was the baby in? And I would also ask this. Does anybody really think in one of those cases, and yes, the wording has been changed, I won't back away from that at all, but does anybody believe in one of those cases where all of a sudden, Tom, the doctor just backed away and, well, I was intending to abort this fetus, child, however you want to label, and you know what, the child has now survived it, but I'm just going to sit back and watch the child die. Give me a break. That absolutely unequivocally does not happen.
Yeah, and while Minnesota's law does allow late-term abortions, you know, obviously through the ninth month, we also need to point out it is very, very rare.
Extraordinarily.
There are very few cases of that, but that doesn't change the fact that in Minnesota, there are no restrictions through the ninth month. And you're going to have the other side argue, okay, one life that late is too many, or mm-hmm. 2 or 5,
right.
Even though it is very rare. So that was an interesting part of the interview. And then what I thought was really interesting, she waited till they had like 2 minutes left in the interview before they got to the multitude of misstatements
mm-hmm.
from Governor Walz about his DUI arrest many, many years ago, his military rank, his carrying weapons in war, whether he was in Tiananmen or in China or Hong Kong during the Tiananmen Square thing. They waited till the very last couple of minutes for that. And I thought her question was good because he always explains it away by saying, sometimes my grammar isn't the best.
Yeah. No.
Some of these things have nothing to do with grammar.
Zero.
There is some clumsy grammar, granted, but
sure.
That's not the reason why you're saying these things.
The Tiananmen Square question came from me. I had totally forgotten about it until Andrew Kaczynski brought it up on K-File. And I don't know the questions before, which led me to ask, when were you in China? And with me, Tom, and you've heard the audio by now, because you saw it before me and you sent it to me, he's very clear. I was in Hong Kong for Tiananmen Square. There's no, he doesn't sound confused. It's not a pronoun in the wrong place. It's not a verb in the wrong place. And come on, if any of us were somewhere unique on a historic, indelible day, you would remember. I get it. We can all forget things, or we convince ourselves of something. But, Tom, I'm sorry. If I'm in Hong Kong on the days of the Tiananmen Square protest, including with the individual standing in front of the Chinese tank, oh, I thought I was in Hong Kong. I was actually at Maynard's. No, you're going to remember where you were, right? It's absurd.
Well, I would liken it to people who would say, on 9/11, I was in New York City, or I was just outside New York City when that happened. It was incredible. You would remember vividly. I remember vividly where I was, and it was in Eagan, Minnesota, getting my kids on a school bus. I remember down to the minute what was happening when I first saw the planes coming in. And Tiananmen Square, to anybody who lived through that, really anywhere in the world, because it was a worldwide story, you kind of remember where you were. I was
in Orlando, Florida. Yeah.
I was in Des Moines, Iowa, and anchoring the news, and we had we were reporting on that for days. It's not something you just, I was there or nearby, or, oh, no, wait, I was there 2 months later. That's a big difference.
By the way, Donald Trump lies about every time he opens his mouth. So I'm not denying that, but you're allowed to hold both sides accountable. And I'm assuming I'm getting the text about Trump. I got it. Tom's called Trump out. I call out Trump on a regular basis. That doesn't mean just because one side does it, well, if the other side does it, it's no big deal. Especially in this case, when Harris and Walls point out, rightfully so, about Trump and occasionally bumping in the truth, well, then you shouldn't have these key points on your side either. Hang on, Tom. Let's get to multiple other stories, including the media tour that the vice president is a part of, and also a second debate already taking place in the congressional second district race. We'll talk to Tom Hauser about that in moments on CCO.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Just last point here on Tiananmen Square. Outside of the day after, and then because it came up in the interview, I have not mentioned Tiananmen Square once. And if you are running for vice president and you say you were in Hong Kong, to me, where this all started, and it turns out you weren't, that's a little different than watching Tiananmen Square in Lakeville. I'm sorry, it just is. Especially someone who is pointing out the differences with Donald Trump and the truth. And let me say again, Donald Trump, in my opinion, is an incessant liar, and I've pointed that out all the time. So I'm supposed to stick my head in the sand if Tim Walz says something? We're trying to, when something deserves praise, when something should be factually reported, report that, and also hold individuals to a standard.
And Chad, let me point out, too, that I've had a lot of people, you know, usually the anonymous folks on Twitter or X going, why weren't you guys reporting about his China lies back, you know, when he was running for office? I go, his visits to China when he was in his 20s had very little to do with him governing the state of Minnesota. I mean, it just wasn't an issue. And like you said, you can't remember why it came up in the interview.
Yeah.
I'm certain it never came up while he was running for governor, because it has nothing to do with governing the state of Minnesota. It's like a lot of these other things, the IVF versus IUF. It really wasn't something that was on the radar. A lot of these issues, we did cover things about his military rank, about his DUI. Those things were covered because they had more to do with Minnesota than these other things. But now that he's running a national campaign, these things have a national relevance that had nothing to do with governing the state of Minnesota. But people just think that we're supposed to be nonstop, you know, watchdogs on everything Governor Walz has ever said or done. And it just, that's just not the way it works. If you wanted to do that with Donald Trump or any politician, that could be your only job full time, 24 hours a day.
And a Texas says Trump intentionally lies in order to influence people. Yes. And that has been pointed out a lot. And just one last thing. I saw Senator Karen Housel the other day where she was linking to a CNN. And it was a very good report talking about a lot of what's happened with Governor Walz while governor. And part of what the senator offered up in retweet is this is never covered by Minnesota media. Well, you and others retweeted. Part of what you said is you've covered a lot of these stories and pointed out to Karen, just because you don't agree with what he said in response doesn't change it. And I saw Peter Callahan point out, if you read the CNN account, there's links to about seven different Minnesota outlets which covered the stories. So,
well, and that's where CNN got all their information.
Yes,
was from stories that we did
in the state
in Minnesota.
Right,
but because CNN is doing it, it's like, oh, look at, see, finally somebody is covering this.
Right,
like she made the assertion, and you know, and I've known Senator Housley since long before she was in the legislature through her husband Phil, but I've known both of them for a long time. I like Senator Housley, totally disagreed with her on this because she said we weren't covering any of these auditors from the legislative audit, and I posted a couple of links to stories I've done where we've covered these, and we've had Republicans on bashing the governor for this, and Judy Randall, the lieutenant governor, and Jim Nobles before her going after his administration. We've done all of these stories. Now, do we do them day after day after day after day? No, they're a story for a day or two, and then guess what? There's more news coming over the transom.
Correct.
And then we're on to covering that. And then people will say, well, we've never asked these questions. The fact that they're not watching or reading any of the local media is not our problem.
Right.
We're putting it out there. If you're not consuming it, I mean, I don't even know what to say to these people anymore.
So tonight, 60 Minutes, they offered significant amount of time where Bill Whitaker scheduled to interview the vice president. That happened. They also offered Donald Trump the opportunity to be interviewed by Scott Pelley. What Trump said is that 60 Minutes and CBS owed him an apology going back to Hunter Biden, the laptop, and unless the apology was coming, he was not going to do it. And unless something dramatic changes in the last couple hours, he did not do it. So that is a traditional hard news interview for Kamala Harris with an excellent journalist in Bill Whitaker. So I'll be curious to see how that plays out, because the one clip they put out about Israel, it was kind of a vague word salad answer. Now, she's also made the decision to go on two podcasts, which are immensely popular. The Call Me Daddy podcast and Howard Stern, right? One more directed at females, one more directed at males. She's also going on The View, and she's going on Colbert. So let's be honest. Those are four outlets which are friendly to her, but all have a lot of clearance, including the podcast. Those podcasts are massively popular. So, yes, she's putting herself out there more. But I guess for me, I would like to see more of a sitting down with a New York Times reporter or sitting down with the Washington Post. But I also accept it's a different world. And this might be just the tip of what's coming going forward, that the traditional role of a political journalist like you or an established talk show host on a major station in town, that maybe they'll go on those, maybe they won't. And the politicians, whereas Trump, Harris, Vance, Walz, will be more inclined to go to audiences where it's more sympathetic and more of a friendly audience.
She will go largely unchallenged on The View. If she ever does MSNBC, well, she just did that recently, about a week ago.
Yep.
And the hardest question I think she faced was, did you really actually work at McDonald's? And it was some cute little way this anchor phrased it. But it was, you know, and Stephen Colbert, you're not going to get challenged there. Governor Walz will be on Jimmy Kimmel tonight. Jimmy Kimmel bashes Donald Trump nonstop. It's every monologue. It is a one-track monologue. It's how can we ridicule Donald Trump tonight? So that's not exactly unfriendly territory for Governor Walz tonight. But the thing is, they are putting both of them out there more to do questions. But other than the 60 Minutes one, where you're likely to get actual journalism, the other ones, they're going to be speaking in an echo chamber.
Yeah. Tell me about today's debate in the 2nd District and the fact we had two debates in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, two debates in 4 days. And it comes down to this, Angie Craig, you can tell it from her ads, abortion is what she is running on again and claiming that Joe Tarab is the antithesis of a woman's right to choose, and some misleading ads that make it seem like he opposes abortion, even in cases of rape, incest, and to save the life of the mother, which he claims is just categorically untrue. So that came up in today's debate. And then inflation. And he claims she has voted for all these bills, that his line is threw gasoline onto the inflation fire. And so they battled about that again today, again for the second time in 4 days, in what is our only remaining, at least as far as we can tell until we get more election results, competitive congressional race in the state. But to give you an idea of even how maybe uncompetitive it is, 2 years ago, $19 million in outside spending from outside interest groups poured into that race. So far, as of Friday, only $1 million this year.
Wow, so that is dramatic.
It is a dramatic drop. Now, generally, October is when a lot of this money gets spent, but it's not going to get anywhere near the $19 million from 2 years ago. And Angie Craig has raised a lot of money, so she's going to outspend Joe Tarab, you know, one-to-one. That's why she's got five ads on the air and he's got one. And so it's going to be interesting, though, to see what happens if any polling comes out in that race. But it's probably somewhere around 3 to 4 point advantage to Craig right now. But a lot of it, like in all these races, is going to depend on turnout on November 5th.
One other presidential note, we have Elon at the second Butler, Pennsylvania event. Thank God nothing happened even close to what happened the first time when the former president was almost killed, although we did have another memorable photo or two with Elon jumping up and down, and that's not going to quite get to the former president when he's going fight, but that might be the second photo. I mean, to have Musk as outspoken as he is as a full-on Trump supporter and running that powerful site is a remarkable thing that's taking place. And I know some people might say, well, guess what was going on with Facebook and other things in 16 and 20. They can try to make that point. I know some truly believe it. But when the guy who owns the clearinghouse of commentary and posting stories and algorithms is 1,000% for one candidate, that's a pretty remarkable thing.
It is remarkable, and he's one of the reasons why, you know, Democrats have a big advantage in fundraising. Kamala Harris has a big fundraising advantage over Trump. Democrats generally have a big fundraising advantage up and down the board. So when you can get an ally like Elon Musk, who's putting millions of dollars into the Trump campaign, it helps at least with the Trump base, which is considerable, and he needs them to turn out. If he's going to win this election, it's going to come down to turnout. And if Elon Musk can help in that regard, that's a big factor in Trump's on Trump's side of the equation, regardless of what you think about Elon Musk.
And over the last couple days, the betting sites have jumped dramatically for Donald Trump. And it's going to change again probably. But since Friday, all of a sudden, the sites that normally have been fairly pick 'em, at least for now, have Trump as the favorite. We'll wait and see if that changes.
And if you look at the aggregation of the polls, it is a toss-up,
yep,
both nationally and in the seven major battleground states. This has all the earmarks of being a 2000 election type of election. It could be that close.
Thank you, sir. Tom will be on Channel 5 tonight giving you plenty of coverage. I appreciate it.
Okay, Chad. Thanks.
We'll also be here on election night. I'll be here along with Adam, Lois Olson, and plenty others, so we'll give you excellent coverage that night here on CCO.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.